Number one, Miriam Bas Yuspa. Secondly, for Avraham, Harav Avraham Shlomo ben Yaakov, who is Abraham Borvik. And Alter Nachman Zalman ben Yosef Dov, Norman Septimus. Their neshamas should have a tremendous aliyah in Gan Eden Shalmaila. So one quick thing to point out after we discussed last night about Kiddush Levana. So many people were asking that if you look on the White Shul note that went out in the mail, it says that we are going to recite Kiddush Levana right after davening. So last night we pointed out that the Achronim on Shulchan Aruch, the Nosekelim, say that a person should be careful to eat and to change his shoes before he says Kiddush Levana on Matzei Tisha B'Av. So I spoke with Rabbi Feiner this afternoon, and he said the shul intends to put out some light refreshments and some water in order that we can all be mekayim that sheet of the Achronim that we're supposed to eat before we say Kiddush Levana. And the reason why we're concerned for people to go home and recite Kiddush Levana at home is, number one, because you lose out on Berovam Hadras Melech, which is a question whether or not that's worth losing out on in order to eat first. And number two, the problem is that we're concerned people are going to forget, right? We're going to go home and have a whole meal, and then by the time it gets around to it, we might forget to say Kiddush Levana, and we don't have that many nights left. So therefore, what we're going to do in the shul this year is that we're going to have some light refreshments right after davening. I assume a lot of people will have their shoes here, or might not. So, being that that might be the case, so we will say Kiddush Levana Berovam Hadras Melech right after davening in order that no one will forget later on. Now let's move right along and discuss a little bit more about Havdalah. Havdalah was the discussion we started 2 days ago. What's with Havdalah this coming year? So we get to Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh, and someone very correctly pointed out that we do recite Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh on Matzah Shabbos this year. Even though Matzah Shabbos is Tisha B'Av, we do recite Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh. So let's just discuss tonight all about the background, the Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh by Havdalah, and a few details, lahalacha, that come out of this bracha. So number one, when a person sees a light, a fire on Matzah Shabbos, he makes a Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh. That we know. Now, generally the halacha is, we don't assume that on a regular Matzah Shabbos, when a person sees light in shul, that he makes a bracha right away. Right? Generally we assume he should wait till he goes home and only then recite the bracha. So the reason for that being, that since he's going to recite Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh al hakos, so it enhances a bracha if you recite it with a cup of wine. So therefore we wait to say the Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh till we go home. But this Matzah Shabbos, when we're not going to be making Havdalah anyway on a kos, so therefore we say Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh in shul. So that is what we're going to do this Matzah Shabbos. We're going to say Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh in shul. The Achronim say that a person should say Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh before he lanes Eicha, because we intend to use the light in the room in order to read Megillas Eicha. So it would not make that much sense. It would be counterintuitive if we would recite Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh after we already led Eicha, lanes Eicha. Oh, so is this the Eish we're going to make a bracha on? That's a great question. Is this the Eish we're going to make the bracha on? I'm not sure. I think in the shul, are they the same?
We light
a candle. Right, so we're going to light a candle, Mestama, and generally we assume you can't really make a Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh on fluorescence. Not only that, you're not even allowed to make on incandescence if it's a frosted bulb. You have to see the actual filament. So therefore, if a person lives at home, the Beis Yitzchak has a tshuva, which many people already quote later on, and everyone discusses this, what's with electricity nowadays, what's with light bulbs. But basically, many of the Achronim assume that light bulbs, as long as they're not fluorescent or LED lights, we assume that they would be considered good enough for, number one, Ne'er Shabbos, and number two, for Havdalah. But when it comes to Havdalah, one must be careful that he's able to actually see the filament in order to make a Bori Ma'ari Ha'esh. So that is going to be what we'll do this week. Now, in Brachos Daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis, the Mishnah tells us, which is the 8th parak, the beginning of the 8th parak in Brachos, the Mishnah tells us that you're not allowed to make the bracha on the Ner Shel Havdalah ad she ye'osa la'oru, until ye'osa la'oru. So what does that mean? Until I have some sort of hana. So the Gemara there later on Nun Gimel has a machlokes exactly what does it mean you have to have hana. One man, the Amr, says you actually have to have hana, you have to go up to it and actually gain some sort of benefit from the light. Another Shita in the Gemara is that no, you don't actually have to benefit, but it has to be light enough that a person could, if he wanted to benefit, he would be able to benefit. The Gemara's shear that we give for how much light that is, how much light do you need in order to have a little bit of benefit? So the Gemara says, in order that I would have enough light to see the difference between a sela and a pundion, between two different coins that were in the times of Chazal. So nowadays, a lot of people say it's to see between a nickel and a dime. That's incorrect, right? You don't need that much light to see between a nickel and a dime. I don't know if anyone here has been to the Living Torah Museum in Brooklyn. Anyone ever been there? Absolutely incredible museum if you ever have time. It's mamish, like you're walking through all of Chazal if you go into that museum. It's unbelievable. Highly recommended. So one of the things that he has there is a stela from the times of Chazal and a pundion. So when we were there, my father asked him, can you show it to us and turn off the lights? And we want to see how much light do we need to see the difference. Can you show us the difference? It turns out, what is the difference between a stela and a pundion? It's not a nickel and a dime, which is very obvious. It's not a quarter and a penny, which is very obvious. A stela and a pundion are exactly the same size. They're exactly the same picture. They have like a horse on it or something. One of them has a horse with like I don't know what you call them, like antlers sticking out of its head. And the other one is just a horse of a head the way it is. That's the difference. Those are the coins from the times of Chazal. He actually has them and has documented that these are the correct ones. That's what the Gemara says is what's necessary. You need to have enough light that you would be able to see the difference between a stela and the pundion. Now, the difference is very subtle, and therefore you need a nice amount of light. So that's a very interesting historical fact, and it's evident if you go there. It's very interesting. He has that and much more. It's a fascinating place to spend some time. The Bir Agra writes in Shulchan Aruch and Arachaim Reish Tadihei B'shein the Psikta that we all know Kalatz Mosa Tamarna. The Pasuk says all my atzamas are involved in certain mitzvahs. My hands do this and my legs do that and my heart is involved in this and my head puts on tefillin and my arms wear the other tefillin. So the Psikta gets a little stuck. What exactly are my fingernails created for? How can I use my fingernails for any sort of mitzvah? So the Bir Agra and Shulchan Aruch quotes the Psikta that there are three mitzvahs that are set aside to do with your fingernails. Number one, the Priya, by Bris Mila, you need to have sharp fingernails in order to do it. Number two, he says, the Malika Sa'of, in the Beis HaMikdash, we know that the Kohanim, in order to do Malika, you're not allowed, if you do Malika Besakin, if you use a knife to do the Shechita of a bird, it's possible. You need to obviously do the Malika Sa'of with your fingernail, so obviously that is another mitzvah that we can do with our fingernails. And number three says, the Psikta, to put my fingernails in front of the fire on Matzah Shabbos to say Bari Mari Ha'esh. That's the third thing that the Bir Agra quotes. That's what Kalatz Ma'asai Tamarna. That's why we were created with fingernails in order to do these three mitzvahs with them. Now, the Gemara says very clearly that a person, in order to make this bracha, must have a ner ha'asid lahayir. It has to be a ner that was lit in order to light up the room, or to actually gain some benefit from the light. However, a ner ha'asid l'chavad ba'alma would not be considered sufficient for the Bari Mari Ha'esh. What does that mean? For example, we know that sometimes when they make Achnasa Sefer Torah, they light candles and they walk in front of it, even though there are street lights all over the place, but it's considered a special kavod to have the candles walk in front of the Sefer Torah. Or we know that sometimes the minig used to be by Levayas that they would light candles and walk in front of the Aron with the candle. So those candles, the Mishnah tells us, are not going to work for the Bari Mari Ha'esh. Therefore, there are many who have the Chumrah nowadays, and it makes a lot of sense that we turn off the lights in the room where we're making Havdalah, in order that we should demonstrate that this candle that we're lighting for the Havdalah is really Lahayr. If you're going to leave the lights on, then what are you lighting this candle for? It's not really Lahayr. Many Acharonim have this Chumrah that therefore a person should be careful to turn the lights off before he makes Havdalah, in order to demonstrate that he's really having benefit from the candle that he's lighting, and it's not just the Chavad Ba'alma. Because that is a din that we have to take a little bit seriously. The Shulchan Aruch does tell us that we have to make sure that by Havdalah we have an avuka. It's not good enough just to have a candle, one wick, we have to have an avuka. So very often we think that an avuka means, what do we think an avuka means? That you have to have two of them put together, right? Very often if a person doesn't have a special Havdalah candle, so they'll take two candles and put them one against the other, and they think that's what an avuka means, which is the simple understanding of what an avuka means. However, interesting maramakum, my father always likes to point out in the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Shechita, which many people don't learn, but in the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Shechita, Siman Yud Aleph, so the Mechaber quotes the din from Chulin, the first parak in Chulin, that l'chatchila you're not allowed to do a Shechita at night because we're concerned that you're not going to see properly exactly what you're doing. However, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you do it with an avuka, if you light a big candle and then you're going to have enough light, so then it's mutter to do the Shechita b'alayla. Says the Ramah, over there in Siman Yud Aleph in Yerodeya, what does an avuka mean? Right, something we never would have found. Over there, Hilchos Shechita, Siman Yud Aleph, has nothing to do with Havdalah. So over there, the Ramah describes, what is an avuka? That you take two candles and put them next to each other. You don't need to put the two wicks together. As long as you have two candles, one next to the other, that's good enough. Which will save us a big mess, because nowadays, when you put two candles together, it drips all over the place. But if you just hold them right next to each other, it wouldn't drip as much. So the Ramah over there writes that that's what an avuka means. Doesn't mean you have to twine the two things together and put them next to each other and have them make one big flame. It's good enough if you just have two candles. Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the Ha'aras 2, Shulchan Aruch over there in Hasagas, he writes, when we say by Havdalah that you need to have an Avuka, it's good enough if you just put the two candles next to each other and that would suffice to be considered an Avuka. So that's just an interesting Maramakum, exactly what an Avuka for Havdalah would mean. That's
Where did it come that everybody thought that you have to do it like that?
I think the simple understanding what I would have said an Avuka means, you need a torch, you need something big. But over here, the Shulchan Aruch says that's not what Chazal defined as an Avuka. Right, Havdalah candles are put together. So that's Havdalah good. There's nothing wrong with it. But if you don't want to make a bigger mess, you're just as good. Right. Yeah. So over here in Shulchan Aruch it says Beferish not like that. It's in often in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Yud Aleph and Yerudea. There's a famous question in the Rishonim and the Poskim and Achronim whether or not the bracha of Bari Mari Ha'esh is considered a birchas hanenin or it's considered a birchas hashvach. Now, what does that mean? What would be a difference? So the Ramban and the Ritva and the Ran and the Rush and in the eighth parak in Brachas all discuss this issue, and they're wondering why don't we have to make a Bari Mari Ha'esh every time we get benefit from the light. Right? The same way every time I sit down to eat a bowl of cereal, every time I sit down to have a drink of milk or to have a cup of orange juice, I'm always going to make a bracha. So why don't we assume every time I get some sort of hana from the light, I should be reciting a bracha bari mari ha'esh. Therefore, say the Rishonim that it is not a birchas hanenin, because if it was, I would be required to make it all day long. It must be it's just a birchas hashvach, meaning what? The same way when we hear thunder or we see lightning, we make a bracha after we see it. So too over here, we make a birchas hashvach, thanking the Ribbono Shel Olam for making such a tremendous miracle that we have light. So we make a Berachas HaShvach, and once a week is going to be good enough for the entire rest of the week. That's what the Rishonim say. Therefore, says the Prima Gadim and the Mishnah Berurah, believe it or not, Mishnah Berurah himself, which we all follow for everything else, the Mishnah Berurah says, quoting the Prima Gadim, that a person, being that this is a Berachas HaShvach, a person should first put his fingernails to the candle, first look at the candle and get some sort of benefit, and only then should you make the bracha of Bari Mari Ha'esh. Why? Because the same way you first have to hear the thunder or see the lightning and then make the bracha, so too over here you have to first derive some sort of benefit or look at the candle first, and only then can you make a Bari Mari Ha'esh. That is Paskin in Mishnah Berurah. So Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva, he disagrees. A lot of the Olam does do it. There is the Mishnah Berurah. Right. So that's it's a famous discussion, whether or not Bari Mari Ha'esh is considered a Birchas HaShvach or Birchas HaNenin. And the problem is, if you're going to consider it a Birchas HaNenin and say you should first make the bracha and only then have the Ana, so then why aren't you making the bracha every time you have Ana? That's the Rishonim's kasha. So that's what leads the Rishonim to assume that this is not a Birchas HaNenin. Otherwise, you'd be chayv to make it all day long. So that's why the Rishonim assume that we should look at this bracha as a Birchas HaShvach, and then the Prima Gadim takes it a step further and says, therefore, that being the case, a person would first... it's preferable to first look at the candles and only then to make the bracha. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, he disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah. So you have Yesh Al Mi Lismach, Rav Moshe writes like that, but the Mishnah Berurah himself writes not like that. An interesting nafkamina that would come out of this is a person allowed to go home? We generally assume that Yatza Motzi, even though I already was Mekayim my mitzvah, I made a certain bracha, I'm allowed to go recite the bracha for somebody else. If he holds the Birchas HaNenin, I don't have a right to do that. If I made a Bari Pri HaGafen on wine, and then someone else needs to make a Bari Pri HaGafen, I can't say the bracha again just to be motzi him, right? Unless he doesn't know how to make a bracha. So if it's a Birchas HaNenin, I'm not allowed to do Yatza Motzi. But the Achronim say if it's a Birchas HaShvach, that would be okay. So now on to one interesting topic just before we finish. The Bach writes in Hilchos Chanukah, Siman Tafresh Pei Aleph, something very fascinating. He writes that we know that you light a Ner Havdalah for Matzah Shabbos Chanukah. Says the Bach, a person should take that Ner Havdalah, put it out after he's finished making Havdalah, and run right away to use the candle for the Neris Chanukah. Why? Says the Bach, because Hol V'Savet B'Mitzvah Chada, since we already did one mitzvah with it by lighting Neris Shal Havdalah, we should use it in the Mitzvah Achrita. We should take it and use it for a second mitzvah and light the Neris Chanukah with it as well. That's what the Bach writes, and it's an interesting thing because it's not so simple. How exactly am I mekayim the mitzvah of Havdalah is usually with the shalheves. It's with the flame. It's not with the candle. Right? So the flame is already gone. So what do you mean? Since I did a mitzvah with it, I should use it again for another mitzvah. Once I blow it out, the mitzvah's gone. There's nothing here. So still, there's something called shiori mitzvah. Right? It's like the way that we facilitated the mitzvah, so we should still use that candle and light it for the Neres Chanukah. That's what the Bach writes, and we find a similar thing in the Meiri in Brachas Daf Lamates, that the Meiri says that a person should take the leftover psilas from Neres Shabbos, right, if he has candles that didn't burn all the way to the bottom. So he says, the Meiri writes in Brachas Lamates, a person should take those Shabbos candles that didn't burn all the way to the bottom and use them for Havdalah. Why? Because since I used them already for my Neres Shabbos, why not use them for another mitzvah and light the Neres Chanukah with them as well? The Ramah writes in Tafrei Samach Dalid.
It's in there in the Havdalah, not
Neres Havdalah, yeah. Yeah, sorry, yes. So the Ramah writes in Tafrei Samach Dalid along the same lines that a person should take his Arabas from Sukkis and throw them into the fire to bake the matzahs. Because hol v'savah b'mitzvah chada, since I once did a mitzvah a few months ago with my Arabas on Sukkis, so now I should take it again and throw it into the fire to do another mitzvah. The Tashbetz has in a tshuva a funny thing. He says, nowadays, which happens to be the practice nowadays, that we do Eris and Nisuin one after the other, right? We get married all in one sitting. It used to be that they would do Eris in the beginning of the year and Nisuin 6 months later, a year later, but now that we do everything together, says the Tashbetz, hol the avid ba mitzvah chada, once the Edei Erisin, once the Edei Kiddushin were set aside to be the Edim for this mitzvah, so why not use them again for the Edei Nisuin? Once we did one mitzvah with these two individuals, let's do another mitzvah. Rabbi Yosef Engel points out in Brachas Lamates, Gliyane Ashas, he says, why do you have to go that far and say that principle, make up a whole new rule? Why don't you say that Hamatzcha b'mitzvah omrim lo gemar, if you were instrumental in helping this couple to actually get married, you were the Edei Kiddushin, so then omrim lo gemar, we should tell you to go the next step and actually get them married off, finally. So that's an interesting time Rabbi Yosef Engel has. Obviously, this is not the minhag nowadays, because nowadays we have so many people at a wedding that need kibudim, and to say from machlokes, obviously we would forego this principle, and we would assume that you're allowed to get two separate sets of edim. The Taz actually writes in Tavkuf Samach, which is in Hilchos Churban Abayis, so the Taz writes over there that we know that the minhag is to cover the face of the kala by the wedding. So he says that what type of cover should we take for the girl's face? So I don't know, we usually take a napkin, a veil, whatever it is. So the Taz says, no, you should take something from the shul, like a mantle from the Sefer Torah, something to cover her face. Why? Because once we did one mitzvah with it, why not take it and do another one? So the other Achorinim are so upset, how does the Taz say such a thing? What do you mean? You can't take a davashol tashmishi kdusha, tashmishi mitzvah, you're going to take it and cover the face of the kala? What do you mean? You have to, so they say it's only if you're masna beforehand, and you wrote specifically that when you're giving it to the shul, you're giving it only al das, that it should be used later on for another purpose, like for this covering over the face of the kala. One last thing, the Ramah writes in Tafrei Shinun Dalet that the minhag is that every single day of Sukkot, a person should buy new aravos and put new aravos into his lulav and esrog. Why? Because it's a hiddur mitzvah. You're going to have beautiful aravos if you buy fresh ones. So he says you should throw out the old ones and get new ones each and every day. Even though if I use the old ones, I'm going to have this principle like we've been speaking about, right? Hol the navad bar mitzvah. Chada, since we already did one mitzvah, so why not do it again, use it the next day? So you see that hiddur mitzvah trumps this principle, right? If it's a toss-up between having a nicer arava or using the one from yesterday, so hiddur mitzvah wins out. Based on this, I saw Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein writes in a tshuva that if a person has a choice to either, for his schach, he can either afford to buy new fancy schach from the store, a new schach mat or whatever he's going to buy, or he can use his lulav from last year, which apparently a lot of people have the minhag that they use the dalad minim from before to throw it on top of the schach. So he says, you see from this Ramah, Tafrei Shinun Dalet, that a person is preferable for him to do the hiddur mitzvah and to forego the using a dvar mitzvah a second time. So that's why he writes over here that if it's going to be more of a hiddur mitzvah to get a nice fancy new schach for your sukkah, that's better than to use the lulav that we already used for some other mitzvahs. Anyway, so over here, when it comes to the candles for Havdalah, so we know that Achorim already discussed it, that since you did one mitzvah, you should do another one, and the Kafachayim already discusses, another Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa has a discussion. A person should be careful that since we did a mitzvah with it, we shouldn't just treat it with no respect. We shouldn't treat it with disrespect. It shouldn't be used for a davar shel chol. We should try to be a little bit careful and give it a little bit of respect, like the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chasa writes about besamim also. Since we use the besamim for a mitzvah, so even when you're throwing it out, because it doesn't smell anymore, you should put it in a bag, not just throw it out in the garbage with all the other dirty garbage. You should throw it out with something special to show that it's a little bit of a dvar mitzvah. We did use it for something special, and therefore we are a little bit more careful with it than we would be with other items that were not used for a dvar mitzvah. Have a wonderful evening.